You're listening to Grove Street Journal.
Enjoy the show.
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Francis.
Thank you for coming on my show today.
Indeed, thank you.
It's great to have you on. I think you're pretty well known in the community, it's safe to say.
I'm old.
Maybe to the outside citizen walking in to a weed store, they're going to see a fantastic store in either Vancouver or Seashell,
yes.
Right? And they're going to see a legal cannabis store in Canada. But there's quite a bit of history that predates this that I'd like to get in a little bit with you today. Mm-hmm. But one of the things, just we were talking before the interview, you mentioned that you use cannabis to help manage vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
That's something I've never heard. And that's what I love about cannabis, by the way. You always find out.
Do you know anybody who has vertigo?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Well, I do now, I guess.
Yeah, you do.
So can you tell me a little bit about that? Was that kind of your first interaction with cannabis?
It wasn't my first interaction with cannabis. I discovered cannabis as medicine as an adult. And I'd start smoking pot or hash actually when I was 14. So what happened is when I was 7, I had a fall from monkey bars in the playground. It fell 8 feet flat onto my back and my head. And since then I've had very debilitating vertigo that I just could not get a handle on throughout 20 years before I found cannabis that cannabis is helping me. What happened was I was smoking pot, but I wasn't smoking pot when vertigo would come on. And vertigo is, do you know what vertigo is? It's kind of, for me, it's a pressure and a spinning sensation that goes inside my head. It feels like it's taking my brain and my eyes and everything and just spinning it around at high speed and getting the propelling motion upwards, so it feels like my brain kind of wants to spin up out of my head, and it's very, very hard to deal with. All I can do is just lay to the ground and just lay still and hope that it'll stop at some time. So that's how I kind of went through my teen years and my 20s, and then in my 20s, a friend of mine said, "Well, why don't you try pot? I hear pot might help that, right?" I'd get sick, I'd get heart palpitations, I'd get super anxious.
Is that triggered by being at a high altitude, or are there
no? It's for me, it's triggered by head movement. If I move my head the wrong way, if I roll over in my sleep on the left side, I'll wake up and I'll be just way out of kilter. I won't be able to walk properly. I'll feel like vomiting. Sometimes I do vomit. And so at one point my friend John, he says, "Why don't you try cannabis? I hear that helps with nausea and it might help with your vertigo." And to me that just sounded completely counterintuitive, which is why I'd never tried it before. Who wants to smoke pot when you feel like you're gonna die basically, right, from dizziness and whatnot? So one time I did try it, and within about 1 minute, I felt this calmness come over me. I still had the vertigo was happening, but everything else just kind of calmed down on me, and I was able to just lay still and just be, and I didn't feel like puking as hard anymore and whatnot. And so that triggered it into me, like, wow, that's amazing, right? It's pretty powerful how much it actually helped me. And so I just went with that. And every time I felt like I was getting vertigo, then I would do that. And it really did help me a lot. And so to this day, that's what my go-to medicine is. And I kind of keep my cannabinoid levels up all the time now so that it's in me, so I don't get that overwhelming stone or high that people doing it recreationally would get. I'm using it as a medicine, as part of my my medical therapy to keep me working every day and whatnot. Otherwise I wouldn't probably be able to do what I do as well as I do it.
My gosh, wow. That's a long way to fall from a monkey swing. And
when you're seven,
I know
seven,
now they have like wood chips and soft.
Yeah, no, they're. I think it was just like matted dirt.
Oof.
You know, in the playground back then, it was.
And do you find a specific type of cannabis helps more, or just like any good quality cannabis is going to help you?
When I started, I was using hash plant, and I find that it's a good help. Sometimes like a purple kush or a bubba kush, it actually makes vertigo worse. It helps with the other side effects a little bit, but it makes my vertigo worse. So it's kind of a trade-off, and I actually try not to go for like a heavy kush.
Mm.
But yeah, Afghani or, you know, hash plants, nice indicas.
Nice. It's always such an individual journey that you have to go on to find.
It really is. It's really discovery, and that's the wonderful thing about you know, dispensaries and having pot shops and older, especially older pot shops, to have that knowledge be passed on and to have that education about strains. And you know, right now there's a big movement to get away from indica sativa hybrid, but really there is actually, you know, we need some label for it, because if I was to get a super silver haze, I would not have a good time on that. And same with, you know, purple kush. If I'm really feeling sick, I'm not going to want a purple kush. So, you know, you have to be able to get what you need.
Mm-hmm. I see the problems with the sativa hybrid indica attributations. I see the need to move away from it, but I don't see something that is as easy and as accessible as that system to be implemented by bud tenders and other people, when you just need to come in and quickly be able to speak the same language as the consumer, as the customer coming in.
Yeah, it's, yeah, the customer, you know, you're their guide. And I think a lot of the old information now is kind of, I don't know if it's being swept under the carpet, or it's just we're trying to break into new culture here or something, when the old culture was doing, you know, really good.
So let's stick to that theme of culture. And you are the owner, co-owner and operator with your husband, the Don, for the Weeds stores, the Weeds Cannabis stores, which is a great name to have. What would you say is the driving culture or ethics or values behind what you do with Weeds?
Good medicine for people, honest medicine, good prices, good value, reasonable access. Be fair. I mean, we like to honor where we are. We're in, you know, first of all, unceded land, and with, you know, a multicultural group of people in our community. And you know, we like to honor that we are with these people, and we're not trying to be something that we're not. We just want to give them a good value, you know, for their money, a good product, first of all, a good clean product. Those are really values that we have brought all along. You know, we're unwavering on our commitment to quality and whatnot. And, you'll edit that out. Sorry. I'm just going on about a tangent here. So
no, that's not. That's, you know, you mentioned to me,
yeah,
price of product,
yeah,
and making sure it's good quality product. I'd say they're two keystones,
mm-hmm,
that are amazing for any retailer to truly embody. And I've seen, you know, I've been into your store and I've seen the prices. Your pricing,
yeah,
is very good, very competitive. Your products.
I get accused of it being too low. I mean, what, you know, we're in East Van. I mean, people work hard for their money. They're coming home at the end of the day. They don't want to come here and find, you know, a $240 ounce or whatever it is. You know, we need to be accessible. Pot needs to be accessible to the people. And it's not at this point for some people. It's still, you know, there's still some price barriers. So we're trying to break that down to make it affordable.
And do you think it's sustainable? Because I know where, how it works in BC, and you obviously have the government entity with their retail stores and their online model, and they have what I probably call like a subsidized business model, because
right,
they run on
they
set margins that are very low.
Yeah,
I think we're talking around in the 20s, 20%.
Yeah,
which for a physical goods business and you need licenses and you need zoning and you need a lease or to own a building, those don't seem like viable margins to run a business on.
It's not viable in so many ways. It's not sustainable, like, just for, you know, us here, the taxes, the rent, the everything that we're paying here is not sustainable. It's not sustainable for the licensed producers who have that excise tax. You know, we pay a 15% distribution fee to the, it's not sustainable at all. Just if we could just get rid of some of the taxes, I think it might be sustainable for more people. But I see a lot of companies are just failing very miserably at this point.
Which is sad to see, because I've also seen that, and I've seen companies that are good companies, they care about things, they're passionate about what they do, they make good products.
It's hard to watch, because I know they're good people and they're trying to do right and they put their whole heart and soul into this, and the government is destroying it for us with their regulations. It's completely overregulated as a plant, but then as businesses, it's overregulated too. It's not fair legalization. It's not decriminalization, which is what we needed to have happen. You know, they moved it from the CDSA, the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, into the criminal code. So there's actual, you know, criminal offenses now that people can be charged with.
So it's this divergence of like, okay, it's legal here, but now if you break the law, there's going to be even worse consequences.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not helpful. It's still, you know, there's still the need to not be in this industry for people.
So we talked about price and quality being these driving values at Weeds, and we've talked about the price there and some of the challenges around that. What about quality? How are you ensuring that good quality product ends up in your stores?
Well, I try to be very discerning in who I actually look at as companies in this legalization. There's companies, you know, right away that I don't want to work with, which I don't need to name names. We know who they are. There's a lot of, you know, good companies that we want to work with. And what I do is, you know, I scope everything that I look at, right? And I kind of try to work with producers, and before I even order their product in, I want to find out, you know, what they're all about and how we can work together as companies, as like a, not a partnership, but a partnership, like we're colleagues, right?
And so when you say scope it out, you're not using the kind of colloquialism for
yeah,
this.
No,
you're literally putting it into a high-end microscope.
I do. I scope. I've done this for over a decade in dispensaries. I've worked at a few dispensaries over 20 years. And I've always, not always, but for the last over 12 years, I've had a microscope that I just look at all the flower before we buy it into a dispensary. And it makes it better. It makes it better for our customers. Makes it better a feeling for us to go to, you know, to sell it. You know, I don't want to sell something that I wouldn't smoke myself.
I think that's just, I can't overstate enough how much of an incredibly important and valuable thing that is for your customers. And if I knew a store was doing that local to me, I'd probably even pay a dollar or two more to go there, because I know that they've looked at everything and I have faith in it's going to be a good product. How much undesirables do you find in the products that you're looking at on the legal market?
Too much, because I am vetting the companies beforehand. So I'm banking on companies that are, you know, doing good product, but maybe 20-25% of what I look at has issues.
For real?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And when you say issues, what are we talking?
We're talking about mold, mildew are the two main things, bugs, residue of bugs.
That's a massive number. So one thing I'd instantly gives me pause for thought there is that doesn't seem to correlate with the amount of recalls that I see coming through the government website.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've submitted maybe like a few dozen, you know, products to the LDB that I want to refund. I want my money back for this whole case. I don't want to sell it in my store. I think there might have been two recalls that have come from that. I'm not sure. At least one.
I know of two that got published through, you know, the BC cannabis stores.
Yeah.
Both craft companies, probably just saying, oh, shit, we made a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
We'll issue a recall because we don't want people smoking moldy product.
Yeah.
But if I've seen two recalls, we can check. And actually, I'll put in the show notes of this episode the link to go and find recalls in BC.
Yeah.
If you're saying 20-25% of the stuff you've scoped, you know, I don't know how many flower products you've got in your store, but it's got to be like 30-40. You probably look at way more products than that as well.
Yeah.
You see there's a significant amount of products that you're finding mold in.
Mm-hmm.
That there's been no, that mm-hmm. I guess you said have been reported.
I do have weeks, like I obviously order every week. Some weeks I have, you know, no issues. Sometimes I have like four things that now I'm having to deal with.
What just seems bizarre to me about this is you're the last line of defense.
Yeah.
And this product has been through, you know, licenses. It's been through Health Canada. It's been through the provincial board and that wholesale system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they've opted to sell it as
and
well.
And also the company and the packaging. And, you know, there's lots of, time for this product to not make it to the shelves.
Mm, that's very, very, very strange.
Yeah.
But makes what you're doing.
In glass jars, too. I mean, powdery mildew in glass jars. That boggles me. Is like, how do you do that? Like, you're setting yourself up for failure, I think. You know, a lot of times when I do complain, they say, oh, you're the only person in all of Canada to complain. There's nothing to see here.
How many people are looking through the product in a microscope?
I am.
And I am now.
Yeah,
I've got to be you now.
Yeah.
I put everything through a microscope.
And I don't, you know, I don't smoke anything that I don't scope.
Mm. You wouldn't just eat like there's a bunch of mold on a tomato. You're not just going to slice it and stick it in your sandwich. You know, like, I think if people saw it a bit more,
right,
they would be a little bit more picky
mm-hmm.
about what they're putting in their lungs.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you know, mold on tomato is very easy to see. And you could, I mean, I'm sure there would be people that would cut it off. Just as there's people who would get a bite and look at mold on it and just pick it out and, you know, smoke it. Which, you know, if you want to do that, that's fine. If you're getting your neighbor to bring you over pot and there's a little bit of mold on the pot, you know, pick it out. You know, thank him for the, you know, what he gave you. But for consumers, for commercial, retail, that we can't do that. Like, how we can't sell pot like that. That's not right.
No, nor should you. Let's touch on the packaging.
Mm-hmm.
For a little bit, because there's a lot of different types of packaging on the cannabis recreational market right now. What would you say is your favorite, and what would be your least favorite type of packaging?
Well, I know Wild has just come out with some compostable packaging, which I think is yay. So that's what I want to see, is compostable packaging. It's something that you can, compostable, right? Or biodegradable, whatever, but...
Do we know what they're making that from? I imagine the hurdle there is probably getting it approved by Health Canada to use. Is that, would you say that's probably the main barrier to this?
Geez, I don't know. I'm not a packaging person, but I know it's excessive. I know some of the, I can't believe how much, you know, the carts, for instance, the packaging for cartridges is, and then they want you using disposable, you know, pens and stuff. It's very, very anti-earth.
Yeah.
Packaging.
Yeah, that took a big step back with legalization, for sure.
Very much.
And I get the challenge of wanting to barcode every specific single product, but I do 100% believe there have been lots of other ways to do it that could still achieve the same level of regulatory control and tracing and tracking without the need for all of this plastic on plastic and all disposable things. And
Yeah, and you know, the even the cardboard boxes that everything comes in, like when we get our delivery, we got, I don't know how, you know, like every single product is in its own little cardboard box, and it's very, very wasteful.
Mm-hmm. So a few things to improve. So would you, what is your favorite, what did you say your favorite type of packaging was?
Just a bag. I mean, a bag.
Like a Mylar bag.
Yeah, Mylar bag.
Okay.
Is Mylar? I don't know if that's.
I don't know. It's kind of a buzzword. It's always what I hear when reps are talking about bags. So I just kind of embodied that.
Yeah.
But whether they are or not.
Yeah.
And then I know that a lot of companies will nitrogen fill the bags to protect the buds from knocking or being squished.
Which is kind of cool. It makes it more bulky now for that, you know, that gram is now bigger, so that takes up, you know, it, everything has its cost to it.
Yeah.
To, you know, and hope, you know, money is one cost, but cost to our environment is a heavier cost that they're not looking at.
No, it's easy to ignore. You know,
it's easy,
like,
to
the, you know,
for a while anyways, until,
yeah,
we're inundated.
Until it's very quickly too late, and yeah, which, well, it was a pretty crazy year here in BC last year in terms of the weather.
Yeah, very devastating. It's a very big wake-up call, I would hope.
Yeah, and then there's, just on the packaging as well, there's like the Boost and the, what are the, Bovita,
oh, yeah,
packs?
Bovita, yeah.
And yeah, what do you think of those?
Boost is a slightly better, I think, product than Bovita, but Bovita is, yeah, I think that's the wrong way to go. It seems to all have, I don't know if it takes on the plastic smell, or there's something about when I open a container that has a Bovita in it, there's a smell associated with that, and I don't know if it's the plastic container, or, you know.
What about a Bovita in a glass? You don't get the same kind of nose?
I think it's a kind of a muted,
right,
nose, and also the Bovita is like, how many times have you opened the jar and felt the Bovita, and it's like hard.
It's already been used.
Crunchy.
Yeah.
Well, it's expired, like it's,
yeah,
done all it's gonna do, and it's just sitting.
I think
there.
You can like do something where you put it in the microwave for a bit and it will rehydrate. I'm sure, I don't know, I'm sure if you Google it.
Don't,
and you're
put
looking...
anything in a microwave. So.
That's fair enough, but
yeah,
if people are looking for a little cheap hack to get more life out of their Bovitas, I'm sure there's somewhere online you can see how to do it. But I definitely agree with you. I'm not sold on Bovitas. I don't know if there's a trade-off there with like keeping the moisture level, but some sort of trade-off with the terpenes.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd like to see some analysis on that.
What I found is just, you know, and this happens fairly rarely, but really good quality flour.
Yeah.
Even when it's really dry and you just like don't look after it and let it dry out, it still has a nose on it for so long. Back,
yeah, when you grind it up, it's,
yeah,
like, okay.
Oh, back to life.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
mm,
yeah. And so I'm just time checking. We've,
yeah,
got about 5 or 6 minutes left, because,
right,
we've just sailed through this.
Nice.
I'm going to have to get you back again to actually, I want to learn about more of your history and the pre-legalization things and of what,
sure,
you were doing there, but I don't think we'll do it service in the time that we have. So what I'd like to do is just focus on maybe what's next for you. You know, have you got plans beyond your two retail stores? And if so, what does that look like?
Well, Don, my partner, he's going to be 72 this year. 72. He just, you know, he's looking at every opportunity that comes his way. He's always done that. And, you know, that's why we have our fingers in so many different pies. We just, one of our companies just submitted a micro application a couple of weeks ago. So we're moving through that. We have some greenhouse space that we want to get legal in and maybe explore farm to gate. Through that, we also have the opportunity to get into Ontario with our brand now, so we're exploring that as well. And then, you know, we're allowed 8 stores in BC. I'm not sure if we're gonna, you know, have 8 stores, but there's always, you know, something going on, something on the horizon for us that we're looking at. So I'm okay with, you know, having what we have right now with Kingsway and Seashelt, but I'm a part of a big brand, I guess, right? So it's not up to me where I stay.
That's very exciting. I love the fact it's a family business as well.
It's family. It's multi-generational. Don obviously is the great grandpa, and then his son and three of his kids are involved in the business, and then the grandkids are involved in the business, and now we have the great grandkids up and coming.
Well, that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
And you've lived through the Prohibition times.
Yes.
So the new frontier.
It's
a new
frontier.
World.
Yeah. It's still Prohibition times, though. I still feel like it is Prohibition times, even though we have this.
That's an interesting point. And I think, yeah, a lot of people perhaps looking in would say, well, you don't have any reason to protest. It's legal. But, you know.
There's still people going to jail for it. There's still people going to court through, you know, for simple possession charges. They're you know, awaiting their court dates. It's still happening to people. Or, you know, it's legalization for some. But it's not legalization for Canadians.
No. Still a lot of work to be done.
There is a lot of work to be done. Like when you can grow four plants in your backyard, but, you know, you can't see them from the street.
No one can see it.
How is that freedom?
Yeah. The cannabis is so potent that just by seeing it,
yeah,
it will take away a child's innocence.
Yeah. It's true, though. I mean, you know, the whole frosting on the doors and whatnot. Like, you know, the licensing person says, well, I know somebody, he's 14 and he's 6'4", so you better get them higher than he can see.
That's ridiculous. That seems very petty. And
it's very petty.
In my
it's
experience,
unsafe.
You know, the best way to do this is just to, like, desensitize kids by not making a big show of it.
Mm-hmm.
And just to being kind of upfront and trying to talk to them about it early, because you normalize it.
Yeah.
So it's the opposite.
Yeah.
It should be.
Yeah.
Should be doing. But Carol, it's been absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much for your time today. I'm really excited to see what happens with the micro cultivation license.
Yes.
With Farmgate, all the opportunities for being able to send
hopefully
that to
they
stores.
Don't stall us for, you know, forever.
Okay. Well, if anyone's listening in on the license side, come on. I don't know, let's get
this. We're good to go.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much, Carol.
Thank you.